Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes, and hey, there's more pro wrestling to be had. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Chris is committing genocide of bugs.
Hawkins, I have embraced the power of the sun. Mm-hmm. It's mine now. I have solar-powered lights, more solar-powered lights, and also a solar-powered bug zapper that is currently doing the damage, doing the Lord's work, as I like to say. Outside in the yard underneath the oasis.
The Old Testament Lord? Is that what you're...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. The Nov God is a vengeful God.
Solar-powered bug zapper, huh?
Yes, yes.
Because plugging it in would be too much?
What? No, you can still plug it in. So, okay. And actually, you should if you want to get it fully charged, but you can use the sun to get it... recharge. So like, imagine
you use the power of the sun, it only stuns them. You have to actually use real electricity.
No, it just doesn't. It doesn't last nearly as long. But like, let's say you're camping, right? You know, if you're camping, you probably don't have an outlet to plug into unless you're glamping. And then like, are you really camping? That's something for the philosophers. What I'm here to talk to you about is, suppose you are away from any sort of power, and then in which case you could use the power of the sun and charge up your bug zapper and at least have some coverage for part of the night and make sure your campsite's not zapped, you know, filled with mosquitoes or whatever. Get it out during the evening and you'll get some good coverage. But like for me, I just have it on the charger during the day here in the desk area. And then at night I put it out there and I relax to the sound of occasional zaps, knowing that my yard is getting all the more bug free.
I could have just stopped you at, let's pretend you're camping, or let's say you want to go, because I went through Scouts And also, my
okay.
My...
So you can pretend really good.
Hold on,
so
but my father and to save money on trips, we'd always camp as opposed to getting a hotel room. And once I became an adult, I said never again, never again. There, camping is overrated.
You know what NXT camping is?
No, but what? What is it?
You go out and you're in a box, and then you can shoot a video package afterwards talking about how you once lived in a box for several weeks.
Oh, camping sucks. I'm sorry.
I think camping is very overrated. And I'm saying this as a person who really enjoys nature, and if you see my Instagram account or anything since I moved to New Mexico, a lot of it's just like me hanging out in nature, me taking photos of nature specifically. And
the best thing about camping is the ability to build a fire.
The best thing about nature is going home to your bed where there are no walls. And I love spending the day out there. I have no interest in sleeping in the dirt. I don't want to get bitten by bugs. I want to live my life. And I can't do that if I have a bunch of mosquito bites on me. It's actually not possible. I tried
sleeping
once.
On the ground is rough. It's, you know, food is terrible always.
And there's dirt.
There's always something that has happened to the food. Like you have like sterno, it's leaked all over the place or something to that effect.
Yes. So
don't camp, kids. Don't
I wouldn't, I would literally say to never camp.
Although I kind of want to keep like scouting camping and stuff like that to teach the youth about how good they have it. It's one of those things where I want to make children camp so that they never do it as adults. Like I have friends who are like, we're gonna go to Yosemite, we're gonna go to Joshua Tree and camp for a while. No,
I kind of want to make adults camp because they don't realize how good they have it.
Okay, we can do that too.
Yeah, now you're kind of talking me into
a
camping program.
You know, like if it's a campsite with like an RV or like a cabin or something, I can do that.
I think they're
pitching tents. No.
Oh,
sir.
No.
Never
I'm
again.
Very
Never
much
again.
Talking about a mandatory, you're out in the woods in the dirt, pal, sort of camping.
So you want naked and afraid for everybody.
Yes, because okay. I think everyone needs to know what it's like. You've talked me into this, Jeff. You're a very good persuasive arguer.
So, what do you want to talk about? We have numbers, and they're all pretty good this week, including the debut of AEW Collision. Let us go through them, because I don't have a lot of other bigger news. Starting with the aforementioned Collision, 816,000 in its debut with one Charles Montgomery Punk. WWE NXT on USA Network, 773,000. Big boost from having main roster talent such as Seth Rollins on there. They were number two in 18 to 49 among cable originals for Tuesday. SmackDown on Friday, 2.43 million viewers, 0.67. Number one in the demo for Friday night. AEW Rampage, 423,000 viewers. Raw, 1.82 million viewers. Chris, do we want to start with people tuning into wrestling or do we want to start with Collision?
We got to talk about Collision Mega Draw Punk.
Yeah.
That is what his initials now stand for.
One Bill Phil. Yes.
Bill Phil. Okay, no. But seriously, he did outperform by, I'd say, a couple hundred thousand where I had the high end. I thought Collision, given the time slot, and I'm not sure if we did predictions last week.
Oh, I forgot as well. Dynamite had like 920,000 this week. It was really good too.
That's good. But I think again, looking at Collision getting 816, given its time slot, once again, Punk debuts or re-debuts or however you want to frame it, and he's able to pop a big number. Now, will he be able to keep that up? That's an interesting question that remains to be seen, but. For an initial start, I thought he once again delivered the numbers that really, if there is, you know, his affirmative argument's very much predicated on it. And when he needs to get the numbers, he gets the numbers. That's something that has been true in this whole run. And whether people like him or don't like him, the results really do speak for themselves on the rating side.
Yeah, I don't know how long it'll last. Let's dive
into... I don't know either.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's dive into some just general thoughts on Collision as a television show, because I did a show right afterwards with my hot takes over on Fight Game, and I don't think I've shifted a lot. I could be convinced, but it felt like to me, and I was a little... Let me go with the good first before I start getting...
Are we going with the show or the drums? That's, I guess, the opening salvo question here.
I'm going with the show real quick. I liked the matches. The matches were good. And the guys that were on it were people I was happy to see again. Miro, Andrade, Punk, of course, etc. I was a little disappointed because I consider it a pilot of a TV show. And I know people get on me about this, but a little table setting I would have liked. I would have liked just the basic, why is this show going to be different than any other wrestling show I'm watching, with the exception that it's just different people on it? And I didn't get that, to me. Some people did. Some people watched the action and thought it was, wow, this is a far different presentation than Dynamite. And I was just like, okay, I might be missing something. I might be missing some stylistic choice here that I didn't see. I do like their play-by-play quite a bit. I did enjoy Kevin Kelly and Nigel together. But I kind of wanted, this is what this show is going to be. And overall, it was weird because I really thought a good idea in hindsight now would be to go in on these are the island of misfit wrestlers, the Breakfast Club, AEW detention. These are the guys that we can't keep on Dynamite because they're a little rowdy and whatnot. And we're going to show you that tonight type of a thing. Didn't mind Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Might have liked something a little bit more current, be honest. I mean, and even that's a choice. I mean, that's a Hawkins Boomer choice, to be honest with you. And God knows we have enough Boomer Rock on this Dynamite show between Jefferson Airplane, Kansas, and Elton John, where you could have given a more, for lack of a better term, urban feel to Collision if you chose to. But they did. It felt to me like, okay, it's another wrestling show, but just with different characters. And am I wrong on that, Chris?
I felt like this was just more AEW. I don't think the commentary team represents a major departure.
Right.
In part because Kevin Kelly's association with Ring of Honor in the past and everything. I know it's Ian Riccaboni now, but like I still think of the Kevin Kelly era of Ring of Honor and their intersection with New Japan and stuff, and just kind of think of him in that orbit. And he's not really that meaningful of a change of pace. I would have liked, again, to make it feel like a different show, a little bit more of universe setting to this point, format wise. I know what Khan was trying to do, but I think it is a mistake to open up with CM Punk before we ever talk about. Yes. Because I think you need to, I don't want to say do a GM angle or something like that, but I think you need to do something that establishes the Collision world a little bit more concretely before you immediately pull the camera into CM Punk. I would do him seg too. I wouldn't wait around because obviously he's got to, you know, be in the main event. You want to set the table for the main event and everything like that. But like the first segment, I don't know. I think I would like introduce Collision.
Yeah.
And get a sense of like, you know, what is this world going to be like? What are some people's goals? I mean, you can have people backstage trying to get to Khan's office or something. I don't know how much of an on-screen character he wants to be.
Am I watching this right now, and why is it important? And why should I continue to watch every week? What is the attitude of this show? What are you trying to tell me, etc.? And it's Punk, and that's not a bad thing.
No, but like for the CM Punk haters, you should especially love my argument, because if CM Punk goes away, then at least now you have an established universe that stands independent of Punk.
Yes.
The problem with Punk leading off the show is now he is firmly entrenched as the centerpiece, the focal point of this show. I like your idea of the Island of Misfit Toys. I kind of like the notion of all of these guys, they don't get along, and so they all start fighting amongst each other, and maybe, just maybe, eventually they start getting, you know, on the same page and start, like, you know, you can do a Collision Invades Dynamite sort of angle, you know, down the road here, if you can work out the personalities, et cetera, et cetera. But I like that idea a lot more than I like leading off with CM Punk, even if from a storyline perspective, I guess we can talk about the drums too, you know, on the sheets and everything. But from a storyline perspective, I think CM Punk's promo here lays down a lot of rails in a number of different directions, and it's very intriguing. Like, there is definitely some rails being laid down to make him a bad guy, no more Mr. Nice Guy, and that sort of thing. You also then have the belt he never lost, which, especially when juxtaposed to MJF right now, sort of makes him like a babyface, or would be a thing that nudges him in the babyface direction. FTR, obviously likable guys and you know, a very good tag team, but like very natural heels, so they're an interesting pairing with CM Punk. And then you have all of the promo, which I guess this is a your mileage may vary situation. You could look at this promo as another Adam Page situation where CM Punk on the very first night of Collision comes out and decides to do his own version of the workers' rights promo to open up the very first show of Collision. I'm not convinced that's what's happening. I believe what is happening is something more akin to a work shoot, and that what Punk said was in between the lines. Now, if I'm wrong on this, and I could be, if I'm wrong on this, then I think that he should get the same condemnation that I gave Adam Page. However, I would also then say, for those in the past who have laid no blame at Page's doorstep for the workers' rights promo, you might want to sit this one out.
I liked the promo overall. I think there are obvious, it was obviously very meticulously planned in terms of certain things, like parallels to his career, such as taking off the AEW, I don't know what they call that on microphones, but he did that with WWE as well, to let you know that this is CM Punk talking to you, not Phil Brooks or whatever.
Or you mean the other way around?
Yes, something to that effect. I don't know.
Yeah, said this is a shoot, brother, and like, yeah.
Yeah. Pew pew. He could have made those noises. I think we are getting into territory again where if you do turn Punk, he's going to be a babyface in Chicago. It's fairly, I mean, when he mentioned both nights on both Collision and oddly enough on Dynamite, when Kingston was talking about the Elite, in some ways there were noticeable boos from this crowd.
Yeah.
I
mean, there
this
was
is a Brit situation Elite. Again. Yeah.
There was an F the Elite chant
for Collision, yeah. And yeah. I think now on the Collision side, I think that's somewhat by design. And I think they're trying to do what WWE always said they wanted to do, but never could go through with it.
The John Cena thing, if you want to cheer for one side, cheer for them. If you want to cheer for the other side, cheer for them.
Yes, where you actually have Raw and SmackDown fans, so to speak. And yes, this is my brand. I like the Punk brand better, and I like the way that they present things. And I like the people on that better than I like the Dynamite brand, which is a little bit more to my indie-rific likings or whatever you are, however they're going to do it. Now, they can, they haven't done it yet, but they could do it. And it feels like they may have set some building blocks for that.
Yeah, I could certainly see it being, you know, you could do this, you could do that. I think they are playing with fire a little
yes.
bit. Because, how do I say this politely? Do I care? I think that the fan base might not be sophisticated enough to understand that this is a work in the year of our Lord 2023. And I think that at live events, especially with some beers and people, especially considering how intense the opinions around CM Punk and the Elite can be, I have seen this and I have read this. It does exist. It is real. I worry that adding fuel to the fire could result in people actually like fighting each other or getting hostile with one another in real life. That when these things come to a head, that like people could be legitimately angry at one another, because people are very emotionally invested, both in CM Punk and also extremely emotionally invested in the Elite. And I think it's gone beyond just wrestlers you see on TV, especially for the people who follow it closely. I think that it's become, I don't know, something deeper.
I'll do you one better.
Ooh, not all, do it.
I think they will realize it's a work, and they'll be even angrier in that case.
Oh, because they got worked.
Well, not just that, but the segment of people that are really taking, say, a harsh stance toward, I mean, not a harsh stance, but a solid stance towards Team Elite, Team Page, Team Bucks, etc. They really don't want CM Punk back. I mean, there's a little bit of anger right now about this. And if they're just going to...
Oh, I wouldn't say a little bit. They're very angry.
But what I'm saying...
I think you're right. It's a big buildup, because if they're getting worked, they're going to feel a bit goofy about it.
Why are they using this guy and what he did to do a program on television type of a thing? And I think
this is where, if it is a work, I think it's a brilliant piece of business, because it's instantly the hottest angle in professional wrestling.
But I mean, not even those two fighting each other, but I mean, just the little digs every week. If Punk just keeps coming out and making little snide remarks a bunch of the Young Bucks and Page, and it never pays off, it's going to drive that Dynamite fan base that loves the Elite crazy, is what it's going to do. And it's going to get them angrier if they know it's a quote-unquote work, but it's a work that will never be paid off.
That would be a big problem. I think that's the worst of all possible worlds.
Mm.
It's entirely possible we end up there too. But if it is a work that involves the FTR guys and CM Punk going up against the Elite, that is, I think, an interesting and intriguing angle. If it is a work that gets nowhere, I think that that's deeply unproductive for the fan base. I think they could get annoyed with having their intellect be toyed with,
No
one likes to be made to feel stupid. They want to buy in. They want to believe in it. And if CM Punk and the Bucks sort of pop the balloon on that, that would be bad, especially if they don't actually deliver like a really great angle out of it.
Yeah, I think it might get paid off in part, but not to the satisfaction of people. And I think it's just going to be continuing to stay in the news type of a thing.
And if it's a shoot, and I don't think it is.
No.
Is why I'm a little confused by the way some have been talking about this and covering this. If it is a shoot, then I think it's an unbelievably poor piece of business. I think if it is a shoot, then it makes the decision to let CM Punk lead off Collision, given what happened at Muffin Gate, absolutely inexcusable, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't either, but I do think there's a bit of a trickster in Tony Khan. And I do think it's like, go out there, punk, and do what you want. And if you're going to tweak some of the fanboys, feel free, because that's good business for us. And, you know, he's not wrong. I just think it's a weird... Look, it's a generational conflict for me. I think today's wrestling fan...
Preach, Grandpa.
It's not the punk version of they're soft and the wrestlers are soft. But they want their wrestling a certain way, and they want certain people to behave a certain way, and they want everybody to be friends. And they want to be in on the joke. And I still think there's a certain generation of wrestlers that aren't going to let you be in on the joke. Know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, in a way, there's nothing sort of more old school than Punk going out there and working stuff along with the Bucks. I mean, look, if they're both in on it, at the end of this, I'm going to have to give them both mad credit because they're doing like the most old school angle you could possibly do.
Well, it's funny because I saw a tweet that perfectly encapsulated this about Punk. I forget who wrote it, so I can't attribute it. And it's not somebody I regularly read, but I think Raj Geary retweeted it. But he's like, I think kind of ironic in 2023 that the guy who is holding or carrying the torch for old school is a guy who in the early aughts was dressing in basketball shorts and kick pads and getting derived from all the old school guys back then for not being professional. So yeah, I'm interested in Collision. It's not appointment viewing for me because I was also expecting them to end on some sort of big angle and they didn't. And that also just kind of
seemed... That was a big mistake.
I agree.
I think that, look, especially if you're going to drive the car through CM Punk, this show needed to begin and end with big CM Punk angle moments. Not just a match, angle moments.
And... Well, the rumor is there was one planned, and it was kiboshed at the last second, and that was Kenta and CM Punk for Forbidden Door. And then Kenta said no thanks. So, I mean, that's a criticism that I will pull back if that's true. But yeah, I was expecting something more to say. And tune in next week to see what happens. And I didn't get that. But returns and injuries. Bandido, broken wrist on last week's Rampage. Returning this week on television, Tommaso Ciampa back on Raw. And also, spoiler alert, 3-2-1. Johnny Rampage, Johnny Nitro, John Hennigan, whatever you call him. He showed up on this week's Rampage and joined up with QT Marshall and his crew. Any thoughts on any of those three and how they were brought back? Or two. Sorry.
John Morrison's a guy who always stays in great shape, but is what he is.
Yeah, but it gives Taya something to do now that she's lost the big match against Chris Statlander, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's not like the D-Generation X girls are really lighting the world on fire.
True. Ciampa was originally supposed to be in a bigger program, but guess who's making last-minute major changes to Raw now, Chris?
I bet you it's Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
And his mustache, yeah. came out against his old, I guess, mentor, The Miz, and laid him out. The rumor is that he and Gargano will be joining up as a tag team, although Gargano, persona non grata on a show in Cleveland. So we'll see where that goes. But that does it for the news portion of the show. Now the much bigger, much more... bigger lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watch, whatever we think about, whatever we want to just talk about in the world of wrestling. But there is a pay-per-view this weekend. We usually start on the beach of the lazy river doing a breakdown of the show. It is the aforementioned Forbidden Door pay-per-view, AEW and New Japan in their second annual joint venture. This one, to me, Chris, has been far better built than last year's, where it was just go home show and guys just show up on the ramp and that's it. We at least had some promos, some video packages, some build here.
All right, so
no comment on that?
On Dynamite?
No. Just on how the build for Forbidden Door has been.
Oh, okay. The general build for Forbidden Door, I mean, they've done things. And in particular, I'm interested in the Jungle Boy match. Just because we all know where this is going. But I still think it's going to be narratively satisfying and everyone's waiting for the betrayal.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
I was going to start with the card, but...
Okay, yeah, hit me with the card.
11 matches. One actually announced after Rampage, so this is yet again another spoiler alert, and I'm here to spoil all of you. Starting with Adam Cole versus Tom Lawler, who appears on Rampage this week, along with Royce Isaacs, part of New Japan Strong. They beat down Adam Cole on behalf of MJF, I believe. Seems like an easy night for Adam Cole, but that'll be a fun match. And Tom Lawler's a fun guy. I kind of like him.
Yeah, no, I think that this, you're exactly right. This will just be a fun match, but I think it will be very entertaining for what it is. This is not a star ratings match, right? Like this is just a good prelim match, but I think these two guys will have good chemistry.
Yeah. On the pre-show as well, in the Women's Owen Hart Cup Tournament first round match, Athena taking on Billy Starks. Your Ring of Honor champ, or women's
Billy
champion.
Starks.
What?
Who's Billy Starks?
Billy Starks has been on Dark a few times. She was on Dynamite too. She's young, blonde. She's about 19.
I'm going to go with Athena.
I could see them giving Billy Starks the upset here. I could, because Athena has the championship. She's on the secondary show.
I'm going to go with Billy Starks.
Okay, yeah. We have way too many tournaments, and we can talk about that a little bit in the Lazy River later, especially this Blind Eliminator tournament, which can they coexist?
I think it's really interesting that they're doing the entire tournament blindfolded.
For the AEW Women's World title, Toni Storm, the champion, taking on Willow Nightingale.
I think Toni Storm's winning this.
Yeah, I do as well. I think they're going to downplay the New Japan Strong title just a little bit so that Toni Storm can breathe a bit as the AEW Women's title or Women's champ. But I don't see Willow taking the title from her. I don't see any, by the way, spoiler alert, I don't see any title switching hands on this entire show. This show to me is like a one shot in comic books. Where it's like, oh, here's this special. It really doesn't matter in continuity. It really doesn't forward any stories. It's just going to be a self-contained one-issue comic book that we really wanted to do because it sounded like a fun story. That's what this is.
This actually reminds me a lot of TNA's one-night stands, which were perfectly entertaining, but...
You mean ECW or TNA?
TNA, they would also do these like one night stands, which are basically like direct to tape pay-per-views.
Okay.
I think that's what they were called. Or one night only, maybe is what it
one night only, I think is correct.
Yeah, yeah. So like one night only. And like, yeah, that's exactly it. And those were a lot of fun for what they were. But obviously had no stakes. But I think
it's a cotton candy pay-per-view.
Yeah, actually, I think, you know, if anything, One Night Only's tended to be a little bit more ambitious with, like, how they would, you know, kind of, like, put you into a mirror world a little bit where, like, a heel and a baby face would have to make a tag team and have an uneasy alliance for the night or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's kind of the energy I'm getting off of this show.
For the AEW International title, Orange Cassidy, Zack Sabre Jr., Katsuyori Shibata, and Daniel Garcia in a four-way match. This was the week, Chris, that I am now all in on Orange Cassidy. It's not that I didn't like him before. It's not that I didn't think he was a good wrestler. I'm thinking possibly world title for Orange Cassidy because the guy is just, it's an ironic gimmick. Don't get me wrong. I don't necessarily look at these gimmicks as things that should be world title material, but I'll watch any match he's in. He's freaking great. And his matches are always pretty great to me. Zoo Knight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Awesome.
I'm glad you are finally on board.
Well, I mean,
the title chase train, because I think he is the perfect title chaser.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would belt him, but I love him in a long program with MJF where he has at least two matches, maybe three matches with MJF, and he's chasing MJF the whole way, and MJF's very much on his heels. He's a perfect underdog. I think we see and have seen, but really over the last like 12 to 18 months, just like way more depth in the Orange Cassidy character and what the Orange Cassidy match is. And yes, I look forward to this match. I think he's going to retain.
Yeah, I don't see that. And I'm also, I wish we hadn't done that babyface tease for Daniel Garcia, because I'm really, I know this drives people nuts, but the unrepentant stupidity of this dance where he's basically become, it's become everything we hate about sports entertainers, where it's just move. It's like a video game wrestler where he doesn't move and he does his taunt. And he doesn't move and he does his taunt. But it's helped him so much.
He's trying to get his spirit bar up, because if you don't get your spirit bar up, then you can't go on special. And if you don't go on special, then you can't deliver your alternative top rope move that's way cooler looking.
It's the actual fighting spirit is what it is. I'm so gonna get killed for that comment. CM Punk versus Satoshi Kojima in the first round of the men's Owen Hart Cup tournament. I think it's gonna be a light night for old Charles Montgomery Punk, but who knows? He could always lose in his Brett, for his Brett fandom. The thing that would turn him heel is losing in this tournament. So I could see him losing any of the matches he's in, but I think he's gonna win.
Yeah, no, Collision Mega Draw Punk. He's gonna win.
Mega Draw. That's great.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In a 10-man tag team match, the Blackpool Combat Club of Jon Moxley, Wheeler Yuta, and Claudio Castagnoli, teaming with Konosuke Takeshita and Shota Umino versus the elite of Hangman Adam Page, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, Eddie Kingston and Tomohiro Ishii. Party match. All party. The one thing I'm going to note is something's going to happen between Kingston and Ishii because they're in the same block for the G1. But I think the Blackpool Combat Club actually win this.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. This, but they win by like pinning Ishii or something.
Yeah, or Kingston, one of the two.
Yeah, right.
And that just drives Eddie Kingston. Oh, nuts.
Moxley pins Kingston.
Okay.
And that drives Kingston nuts. I was trying to think of like what would be the storyline implications here. Kingston got reinserted there, and like you had that little confrontation. So like, you could have Moxley.
Oh, I'll one up you.
Okay.
Moxley knocks out Kingston, and then he lets Claudio pin Eddie, and that just drives Eddie up the wall because Eddie hates Claudio in this story.
Oh, yeah, just to really rub salt in the wound.
Mm-hmm. Six-man tag match, Le Suzuki Gods, Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki versus Sting, Darby Allin, and a player to be named. I have no idea who this player could be because the Japanese legends I was thinking of are barely out of the hospital, barely moving or retired, but I could see. And he says it's somebody from Jericho's past because he's ticked off a lot of people. Do a reckless speculation and give me somebody here.
Ultimo Dragon.
Ooh, I like that. I think it's going to be Naito, because of the program started in New Japan. credit to my co-host Paul Ace Fontaine, who actually watches New Japan and told me about this. So I'm going to go with Naito coming out, or maybe even Hiromu, since he wasn't in the Sting match last year and he was very disappointed by that. But I think it's going to be pure New Japan. I love the Ultimo Dragon pick. I love, you know, there's a lot of great guys they could pick if it wasn't just a New Japan All Elite Wrestling crossover type thing. But yeah.
Guerrero.
He is actually, you know what? I thought about that for a moment, Chris. I seriously did, because he is on, I believe, Defy versus Progress card the night before this in Toronto.
He's still active, right?
Yes, and he's in town. So I was thinking, yeah, that's a definitive possibility. And of course, they have the thing with the tasks of Jericho or whatever that MJF put him through, and Juventud was one of them. I mean, there is that callback there, and that's not the worst guess in the world, to be honest with you. He is in Toronto that weekend, and he is wrestling. MJF versus Hiroshi Tanahashi for the AEW World title. I think MJF just takes a powder. I gotta be honest with you. I don't think there's a match at all on this thing.
MJF gets himself disqualified about like 15 minutes in.
Yeah, kicks him in the nuts.
Yes.
Leaves.
No, that's how I actually think this ends. It ends with him kicking him in the nuts.
I'm sick of this. Boom. I'm out of here.
Yes, right. Like the match gets somewhat competitive. MJF just wants out.
In an intriguing match for me, because I'm very intrigued by this. So thus, it's an intriguing match. That's a preamble for you. Sonata versus Jungle Boy Jack Perry with Hook for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. There's no way Jack Perry's winning this. I am fascinated that they took the TNT title off of Wardlow and gave it to Christian on that first collision. Because I just don't understand that move at all. Because I thought Perry was going for the FTW title. But if they give him the TNT title, that is gold. I think this match is going to be pretty damn good, and it's going to see if Jack Perry can go to that next level of singles things. Like, I'd love for him to have a run in New Japan. I really would. Just to get kind of the mid-card stink off of him in AEW. But I got Sonata winning this. What do you got?
Yeah, I got Sonata winning this as well. I think this is all about the aftermath, and I think insofar as this show matters, it's all going to be about the broader implications. To circle back to the last match real quickly, I think MJF gets disqualified, and that disqualification in a title match leads to stipulations going forward in his next program about there's no DQ, like in his match with Adam Cole here.
Yeah,
it's some sort of no DQ match because he got him disqualified during the Tanahashi match. In this match, yes, I think Jack Perry deliberately cheats. Hook sees that, and then Jack Perry still loses.
Okay. I am good with that. And then your co-main events. Both have wrestling fans salivating. Can't say I'm not also, or something to that effect. Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada in a singles match. I'm here for this. I am so friggin' here for this. I'm also fascinated at who wins this match, because I think Okada is going to be turning heel very soon. I could see Danielson winning and it being a big night for the Blackpool Combat Club. But I think this is just going to be one where it's like grab your plate of nachos and just enjoy it, kids, because it's going to be fantastic. Because I think, look, there could always be a lack of chemistry. But I doubt it. I think Danielson is going to win this match, though.
Yes, I increasingly am of that opinion, especially given the Wheeler Yuta situation and everything. That, like, if Danielson loses, then everyone in Blackpool has lost recently, and there's like really sort of no drama there. But the whole Danielson scowling thing and getting angrier with Yuta as the weak link, I think that needs to be amplified by Danielson getting a win, albeit a cheap win, over Okada. I think Danielson is going to, even though he's a heel and everything like that, like, actually do, I'm not going to be a second nut kick, but like, you know, remove a turnbuckle and like basically win pretty damn dirty.
Screwdriver?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes, exactly. Like something to that level. And then, you know, get Okada to pass out so that he can say that he won by, you know, getting Okada locked in, you know, crossface chicken wing, you name your submission. And that's where I think the finish of this match goes.
Okay, because that's interesting, because I can't talk myself into a screwy finish on this, because I think you're going to need the screwy finish for Ospreay and Omega, which is the next match. Because I think you're going to need Don Callis' involvement, possibly Takeshita's involvement in here. I think Danielson beats him clean, relatively speaking. There might be some chicanery, but not a lot of it.
Well, I don't think he has outside help. In my narrative, he's definitely not getting outside help.
Okay.
Because he needs to be able to say, I beat Okada on my own, which is not the same thing as clean, but it needs to sound similar enough to clean that it washes.
And finally, what I think will probably go on last, but it could be switched up. Kenny Omega, your champion, versus Will Ospreay for the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship.
I think that Omega loses here because Ospreay is the champion, right?
No, Omega is the champion.
Oh, okay. Then no, I'm sorry. The champions. I forgot who the champion was. The champions are going to retain. Omega wins, but I think like Ospreay's the next member of Don Callis's family.
I'm not sure about that yet, because that promo was weird between Callis and Ospreay. You'd think Ospreay would be all in for having a little bit of help and security there. I think Ospreay actually wins this title, but he's not happy about it because it's all because of Callis machinations in the background. I don't necessarily see Ospreay and United. I forget the name of the stable offhand, but you know, the big one that they have with Aussie Open, and I believe Cobb and Great O'Con are in it as well. It's left my brain for right now, but I think
United Alternative.
United Alternative. I also think they get the belt off of Omega just to get the IWGP clear of AEW. And I think the trade-off is Danielson gets the win over Okada, Ospreay gets the win over Omega. I think that's how we're going to do it here, because Sonata's already going to be going over and nobody else is getting a big win over an AEW guy. So I think Ospreay gets the win here over Omega, but it'll be a fun card. Sunday. We'll talk about it next week. Chris, your turn on the Lazy River.
I guess let's talk about the high quality officiating of Mustafa Ali. This last week we talked about it was the sudden launch of one of the better angles of 2023, where we saw one ref make a bad call, a second ref come in, and that led us to a promo between Mustafa Ali, Wesley, and Tyler Bate, wherein all of them came off as incredibly smart and likable and not at all obnoxious. And in their wise thinking, they concluded that the only way that they could have a fair match is if Mustafa Ali was officiating it, because reasons. Fast forward to this week, after what was 168 hours of pure anticipatory build, and now we're in the ring. The music has died down. The lights are coming up. The referee is Mustafa Ali, and he announces the beginning of this match. And we're treated to slow count after slow count. And at the first one, I was like, I don't quite know what's happening here. And then he did a second one, and I was like, ooh, I'm not quite sure. Where are we going on this road? And then there was more nebulous officiating. And finally, we came to the conclusion of the match.
Okay.
That's my whole review.
Yeah, I
that's all I got.
I hated this. Booker T was done with it at some point.
This was crap. This is absolute crap. There was no logic to any of it. Mustafa's a dick at the end. He's holding up Bait and Wesley's hands, and they can't make up their mind about how they feel about Mustafa Ali, who's clearly being disingenuous, but Bait and Wesley are too stupid to put this together. So they all come off as idiots. Mustafa Ali comes off as a jerk. Bait, for his part, when he doesn't come off as sappy, he comes off as dopey.
Yes.
And then you have Wesley, who is this guy who thinks he needs to be friends with everyone he's going to have title shots with just because he's a babyface. And that's moronic.
And then he gets mad at friends who ask for title shots. You forgot about that part, too. So,
right.
All right,
right.
I need to cleanse my palate. I can't talk about this angle anymore. I need to talk about something good. So,
okay, fine.
The end of SmackDown last week was fantastic. I know you AEW fans are out there. I know you're out there and you hate this bloodline angle, even though it's gotten really good in this last year and a half or so. I know you hate it because you want to win. And I get that. I trust me. I get that. But you got to give props to when they do good, solid professional wrestling type of television. And this is what this was. Jey Uso gave a nice promo to his brother Jimmy, swerved on Roman, and Roman, man, I know Roman is overpushed. I get it. I know Roman's not the greatest technical wrestler in the world. I get it. But he's been fantastic as the head of the table on this run. And his selling in this angle, that the first kick was great. The first super kick. That second one where afterwards he's holding his jaw and he's angry and he wakes up and he runs full speed into the double kick and just dies. That was fantastic. That was a great piece of selling and a great way to end the show. I'm sorry, I'm still in on this program. I probably won't after the next couple of twists and turns, but right now I'm here for Usos versus Solo and Roman. And Heyman was the glue that brought it all together, because he's giving these little promos backstage. He's such a total simp to Roman when he's, yes, my tribal chief. Everything about this. Look, I get the community theater criticisms. I get it. But for the way that they do professional wrestling and their promos, and they love the drama and they love these types of things. This was one of the best things they have done since the Sami Zayn split off, especially. But yes, I really enjoyed the end of SmackDown this week.
Yeah, as I think more about Paul Heyman's performances, I increasingly view them through the lens of the overperformance of Paul Bearer.
Yes.
And that...
Oh, yes!
That... What Paul Heyman is doing is the perfect level of overbearing for Roman Reigns as Paul Bearer's is for The Undertaker. Just a little bit goofy, still mostly like menacing, calculating, like someone you have to take seriously. But that in a way they have almost like a similar sort of energy, although obviously Roman's not doing like, you know, Lord of the Undead or anything like that. I thought that the Usos part of this was great. I think they are coming out of this with WWE's fan base just white hot as baby faces. I'm with you. Hesitant. Certainly with Vince McMahon back in the picture, the uncancelable Vince McMahon back in the picture, I am certainly thinking that the consistency with the Usos storyline is not going to necessarily be there. But, you know, if I'm playing with pieces on the puzzle board right now, I would be looking to make a new faction with Roman, Solo, and a couple of, or a few hired guns that Haman brings in, and then have the real question be on the babyface side, can the Usos and Zayn and Owens align? Especially with like Owens being a rageaholic, can Sammy tame him? Can the Usos make amends with Sammy? Like that dynamic on the babyface side could be a lot of fun to see grow. And I think it would leave room to run for something that's no longer the bloodline, but is still a storyline that is focused around Roman with the title.
Yeah, I see this transitioning, but I still see somehow everybody ends up turning on Roman and Roman becomes sympathetic somehow. I do. I mean, I could see Heyman destroying it from the inside. You know, he brings back Brock, and Brock is the catalyst for it. I could see the Usos getting... Once we split off Solo from Roman, that's where it's going to be very interesting. Because I think eventually Roman and Solo have a falling out, and then Solo joins the Usos. And then we have to see if it goes to the Usos' head and they become heels, and I think that would just be so stupid. But we'll see. It's your turn.
Let us talk more about NXT. Let's do it. Dana Brooke came back. The one thing I will say is it is impressive how she's like been able to like actually like, you know, physically reshape her body and stuff.
I really like her personally.
No, yeah, she's done it. She's impressive stuff with her physique, but yes.
She has persevered. She was brought up too early. She's being told mixed messages by certain producers. It's one of those things where it's like, she's a gamer, but man.
I'll continue on here.
Yes, please.
I actually enjoyed Von Wagner and Mr. Stone's interaction this week. They finally got me, Jeff. I actually thought that this was, it makes Von Wagner a lot more compelling and interesting as a character. I mean, could they duff this? Dude, it's WWE. I say this all the time, but like, I thought this was pretty good. Also, I am very here for the potential of heel Gable Steveson and Damon Kemp coming together. Because I think this whole Gable Steveson's here to help Eddie Thorpe thing is a swerve, and that we are absolutely getting heel Gable Steveson, and I'm all about it.
Gable Steveson appearing on NXT was very interesting because Uncle Dave on Monday, or on the Sunday night Observer, was talking about how Gable's going back to college to use his last year of eligibility. And I'm wondering if Dave got a little worked. I'm hoping he didn't.
No
but,
way.
Raw Underground is a crap segment.
No, 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 no.
It is.
Stop. I need you to stop because Raw Underground gave us Dabba Kato.
Yes, I know. And that's I think this is the end game. I think Dabba Kato eventually shows up on this thing and kills everybody.
I hope he does because the man is a pit boss. And prior to recent missteps in his presentation, they had him white hot. The fans were ready for Dabba Kato.
I loved Thea Hale again in the Tiffany Stratton thing. Just getting the Kimura on there. And yes, comedic geniuses, Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey. Drew Gulak. Wait, you just graduated high school? I died at that. And Dempsey just being the straight man, doing his old man's bits. I need Andre Chase back here sooner than later because Duke Hudson.
I just need Duke Hudson gone. I actually think the Gulak Dempsey Thea Hale chemistry is clearly there and off to the running. This is great. Like Gulak and Dempsey are trying to do like serious training, and you'll have Thea Hale who is at once extremely serious about training, but also not serious the way they're serious about it.
Uh, Do I want to go to AEW Dynamite or do I want to do Logan Paul?
I guess it is your turn.
Logan Paul is now in the Money in the Bank men's match. And I think plans have changed. I know that there were people talking about Damian Priest. I know LA Knight was a dark horse. LA Knight is... The crowd has caught on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is fascinating to me. The crowd loves their sing-alongs. WWE crowds love their sing-alongs. And they're getting, you know, their Rock Austin type of guy, because he's basically globbing both of them at once. I'm amazed that they haven't turned on LA Knight, but here we are, and he's getting massive reactions on Raw. But Logan Paul's still one of the biggest stars in the world. I think you give him the Money in the Bank briefcase just for the press. Am I wrong on that? I mean, he can go. He's a legitimate threat, and Seth is the champ.
Right. That's what I would do. And then, yeah, you obviously have him out there for months talking about, you know, I could cash in my Money in the Bank contract at any time if I wanted to, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think you give it to Logan Paul. And then on the women's side, Trish Stratus added to the match. 47-year-old Trish Stratus. Still. Lord, she's gorgeous.
And can I just say, with regards to Cody Rhodes, hashtag finish the story. I feel like we are getting there, getting closer every week.
Your turn, sir.
Okay. So I want to talk about Rollins on NXT.
Okay. For
him as a babyface mentor in this character in NXT did not work with Nathan Frazier, did not work with Carmelo Hayes. Like, his ha ha ha, ha ha, you're Carmelo Hayes, ha ha, get him, champ. I did not think that's
pretty good.
Thank you. I didn't think that actually did anything for Nathan Frazier, even when Rollins tried to ramp it down. It's just that, like, you have to go down from ha 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 ha, ha. I want to tell you something real quickly. I'm really proud of the star that you've developed into, and I think that you're going to do a really great job carrying that trophy. Ha 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 ha, it's heavy. And then, like, when he ran into Carmelo Hayes, you know, the like weird need for both of them to seem like hella cool at all times. I mean, it didn't actually result in, like, you know, the warm fuzzies or anything at the end of their interaction. And then we get to the match with Bron Breakker, and I'm confused. I'm really confused why we're having this match after I just saw Seth Rollins with an opponent I'm infinitely more interested in him having a match with than Bron Breakker.
Yeah.
And Bron Breakker loses. So, you know, I thought that Rollins' little foray into NXT here did not really help much of anything. It was poorly planned. The execution was fine in terms of in the ring, but, like, the actual backstage stuff with this character and with this title belt, nothing was gained.
I want to go back to Dynamite and talk about, man, love you some tournament, something like Tony Khan loves tournaments. We have the Owen. We have the women's Owen. And now we have this blind eliminator tag team tournament. And for anybody who points at WWE, where they always do the contender and the champion and the can they coexist angle, y'all need to sit this one out, because we're doing with MJF and Adam Cole. And I hope they get rid of them soon, like first round, and then go on to the rest of this blind eliminator tournament. I hope they don't have to coexist for a long, long time. Because my Stanford
I would have them coexist right up to the week of the title match and then have MJF use that match.
I think that's the plan.
As the opportunity to injure Adam Cole.
So we're also doing a battle bowl at the same time. And it's like, it feels like there's a lot of moving parts, but it's in lieu of actual storytelling in some ways, or story building or angles or anything to that effect. I get it. I'm like, man, we're having three tournaments at once and it's going to be like, and I don't like MJF being in a tag team title tournament when he's the champ, but I get it. I guess this segment wasn't for me, and I think it's probably because, well, I admittedly laughed at the Shut Up Shivani thing. I want to keep my main event and my comedy separate, and, you know, I guess it was fine for that one moment, and it's fine that Adam Cole is somehow tricking MJF into all these matches, even though Adam Cole isn't going to benefit in any way from MJF facing Tanahashi, which is logically unclear why he'd want that. I don't know, Chris. Maybe it's just a generational thing. I'm just being cranky.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't have any strong opinions on that take.
Oh, okay. Your turn, if you have anything else.
I thought otherwise, though. This is kind of like a kind of a ho-hum little Dynamite here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude, Chris Statlander versus Taya, not really. Yeah,
I get that from a match perspective, but I thought it did some nice angle building. Like, look, Eddie Kingston's always welcome on a show for me.
Yeah.
In terms of talking.
I mean, I guess I also started off flat by seeing Jeff Hardy on my TV screen. So.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna keep beating up on it.
Oh no, I'm with you. I'm just like I can't.
No, I mean, like, the program started. I saw him and I was just like, nope.
Oh, there's a certain part of our fan base that will be remiss if we do not talk about the concession stand brawl.
Oh come on, this was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah,
I thought it was
a tad overbooked,
but it was fun.
And, like, yeah, everything that Jeff Jarrett's doing is kind of in this vein now. And, like, no, it's not. I mean,
it ain't high art.
No, exactly. It's not high art. And
no.
I think it's entertaining. If you don't, I get it. But I also don't know what you want out of Jeff Jarrett in his 50s. I think he's kind of overperforming.
Yeah, I think there was there's a definitive logic gap in booking this match in terms of, all right, the Satnam crew is just going to beat on Mark the entire match. And then finally, Chris Daniels and the Lucha Brothers and the Best Friends will come out to help. But some of the little things in this just amused me to no end. Like even the preamble to where the referee's asking if he's ready. And every time Jeff Jarrett is pacing, he grabs a bag of popcorn and just throws it at Mark. That just made me laugh so hard. Of course, Chekhov's mustard on the table there. Loved that. And yeah, you got Papa Briscoe in there. You got Karen Jarrett. You got Sanjay. You got the whole crew, this wacky, as Brian Alvarez got, this wacky crew of guys.
Yes. And one more thought on this. I think it's good for Mark Briscoe to be out having fun matches that mm-hmm. keeps wrestling fun for him. And I think that actually what Jeff Jarrett is doing here is kind of like true buddy work too, you know, like getting your boy back up and keeping him in love with the stuff he loves after
nothing
something.
Too heavy, nothing
yeah.
too, you know,
yeah,
and nothing too tag teamy to remind him of his brother necessarily. Yeah,
right.
I think it's
I think all this stuff, I think what Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett have done in terms of being a friend for Mark Briscoe is extremely, extremely laudable. I mean, it's like a quiet story of 2023, but to me is one of the nicer ones.
Yeah. And boy, I loved that Jarrett promo that they cut on Rampage for it. I think, look, again, there are people in the Fightful neighborhood that do not like Jeff Jarrett. They're mostly younger, and they're wrong. I'm loving his run here. And look, he's nowhere near the world title. So relax, people. He's still great.
I mean, not for nothing. Jeff Jarrett and MJF in a short program would actually be very funny.
I'm kind of here for that.
Yeah.
You know, I still wish he was on Forbidden Door, but, you know, we can't always get what we want. And it's for the super fans, not the people like me. But you want to cut it off there?
Yeah. If you try sometimes, you might just find that you get what you need.
You can follow me on Twitter at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. Message him. Tell him to come back on Twitter. You can just follow the show at... You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I update that whenever the show goes out. Usually about 12 hours after this flagship, but nevertheless, that's when it comes out. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Music of the Mat, 5-Star Match Game, The Good, Bad, The Hungy. Days of Thunder, just anything for your wrestling fandom. We have a podcast for it. I'm a member of another network as well, Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. For $5 a month, at around, say, midnight Eastern, the Dynamite Show drops on Wednesday nights. Hot takes for myself and Paul Ace Fontaine, thoroughly deconstructing everything AEW. Chris has interest too. Some of them are actually...
Yeah, no, I like things.
Yes.
You act like all I'm interested in is
killing bugs and guitar.
Yeah, but I'm doing a lecture series on Jimi Hendrix. He is both a musician and a person, and you can learn a lot about the history and his playing of guitar. And specifically, this week we're doing a 2-hour thing on Are You Experienced? I've done a bunch of research on it. If you are interested in learning guitar, it's actually, I mean, Hey Joe is actually a good beginner song. So that really, this is a lecture designed for everyone from introductory all the way up to advanced, which I'm kind of satisfied with here. And yeah, if you want guitar lessons, you can also message me on Instagram. As Jeff said, it's Dr_Nov, N-O-V. You can also hear my first mastered recording. I for a birthday present, actually splurged and got something professionally mastered. I mix all my stuff, but my buddy has all the mastering software and actually does that professionally. And I got a good rate, and I made a version of Fugazi's Waiting Room that I had professionally mastered. And I thought I came out pretty darn well for something that I did sitting here in the same spot that I tape this high quality audio for you people every week, because my heart's big. I feel for all of you. No matter what Jeff says, don't let him bring you down. I don't.
How am I supposed to follow that?
You can't.
Right.
You turned it back on, you idiot.
Did I?
Yes.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Euro Graps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling and it happens in Europe and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EuroGrapsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.